Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, what's up? Chase Thomas podcast back again. The Daily Gamecocks. Joe Machica is here. Joe, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. It feels like forever ago that my Tennessee Volunteers dismantled your South Carolina Gamecocks.
Yeah, it does feel like forever ago. South Carolina's been up and down since, so especially to us, it definitely feels like that one was a long, long time ago. Long time ago.
It was fun, though. Were you in attendance?
For you. for the second, I mean, we came alive there in that second half and, shown what we can do. We do that at least once a game per season, I found. Against you all and the Volunteers, it just... too little, too late. It seems to be the story with this team this year, and especially last week at Missouri, we saw a little bit more of the same. So, yeah.
Well, okay. So, walk me through what happened with Missouri, because I did the recap videos and I was watching that because obviously there were no offense to the South Carolina faithful, but that game did not have my full attention. So, for the folks that did not sit through the 60 minutes there, how would you articulate what happened, especially late in that game, and why South Carolina ultimately fell to Mizzou?
So, especially like late in that game, the first half was, it was kind of back. It was really back and forth. They would score, we would score. Just really responded there. But right before half, we thought we had them. We stopped them on the goal line with they had zero timeouts. But they had the kicking team ready, so they trotted them out there, sure enough, and they were able to kick a field goal with, as time was expiring. And so I think that going into the second half definitely swung the momentum. And as the second half kind of progressed, our run defense just kept giving up big run after big run after big run to Tyler Beatty, who's leading the SEC in rushing yards. And so with Beatty being just – he would be there – our defense was on the field for so long, and then our offense would get on the field – it would just be – there was a costly turnover, which ended up resulting in, the whole momentum swing when Jason Brown fumbled on, our four-yard line. We couldn't get anything going, in the third quarter offensively, which, eventually led – they scored seven in the third quarter. But, with that fumble that Brown had pretty much swung the momentum in their favor, and we couldn't get it back. Our offense just kept stalling out there in that second half, and you just when your offense can't do anything and your defense can't really stop the run, it's hard to win football games. So, credit Tyler Beatty; he ran all over our poor defense. But at some point, the offense has to be on the field long enough to give the defense a little bit of a breather and kind of recap some things instead of always four and outs and what have you. Let's say. The offense generated there in that third and fourth quarter, just it's not acceptable in the SEC. You just can't have that.
So what's gone wrong on in that department with the offense late in games? What has happened in the last few weeks? What's just really, really frustrating South Carolina fans?
So, I mean, from our standpoint, it's definitely like running the ball. Our game plan has not been up to par as in the run game, at least. One thing that coaches were talking about with Mizzou is that, you know, we didn't, I guess, prepare well enough to see all of the blitz packages and what have you. And this team thrives on getting the run game. Like, Beamer's offense thrives on getting the run game going to an extent. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be there all the time. Like, we've seen, like, bright spots out of this offense when we're not running the ball well. It's just, it needs to be the complete package and, you know, having the run game synchronous. And, like, with that, just, like, the biggest frustration is, especially after last year, when Kevin Harris went for 1,000 yards, just not being able to run the ball. And I think it's, you know, we do have our troubles on the offensive line. You know, we've got a couple guys banged up, but that shouldn't be an excuse for, you know, matchup-wise and not being able to read the blitzes. So, I mean, long story short, just our inability to run the football is eventually costing us games, because if we can't run it on first and second down, in like a normal pro-style offense, then you're left with like a 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, 3rd and long situation, and just every single time, like, it leaving it to that one pass play, or even leaving it to pass plays on 2nd and 3rd down, just a lot less of a chance to convert through the air than, you know, if you can get a big gain on 1st down. You know, so just the offense and their inability to run, and the inability to just, I guess, game plan, like, because we've seen that a lot, or I shouldn't say a lot, a couple times from like Beamer's team and Marcus Satterfield, that you just, there have been things like schematically that we haven't necessarily addressed and that we weren't entirely prepared for. They talked about it this week too, that just coaches need to do a better job of rehashing things and making sure offensive linemen are seeing the things that the right, you know, schemes out there and expecting pretty much everything. But
So why did those issues not prop up against Florida?
I think because Florida had shown most of their game film, or from what the coaches have said in press conferences, is that Florida's shown a lot, and that Florida reacted similar to us, like scoring. They reacted in that game. They reacted poorly, I would say, to just adversity and us scoring, like the back and forth game. Florida got hit in the mouth in that game, and they didn't respond. And I think it was more of them collapsing. And then it was also our run game too. We didn't have the right game plan for Florida. We saw what was going on, what they were going to try to do defensively. They're not as much of a dynamic team defensively as I would say as a Missouri, at least from what I've seen watching them on tape leading up to the game. But I definitely think that we were more prepared for Florida than we were a Missouri and a say, what's another game? We lost Kentucky. That we weren't as prepared for, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's fair considering Shane Beamer has been packing his bags for weeks now, wondering when he's getting the call from Hokie country, when it's time to go back home and follow in his father's footsteps. No, I don't think he's going back. I think from my perspective, and just I feel like this is a general perspective on this, is just that, like, I wouldn't want to follow my father's footsteps, especially a legendary father anyway. And also, I think South Carolina is a better job than Virginia Tech in 2021. So, I mean, obviously the SEC is changing and we're probably gonna get the pods and the East will be different than it is now. But by and large, I'm choosing Columbia over Blacksburg every day of the week, and I'm not following my legendary father, who is probably the best coach in that program's history. So hard pass. But he also just gave a really great answer about his kids growing up in the area and he wants them to go to high school in Columbia and everything. I think it's just less about, do you think he'll go to Virginia Tech, but do you think he is someone that, if a better SEC job comes up, like if Florida calls or something like that, that would be more interesting to me? But it's also just that, like, we haven't seen enough yet, and we're in year zero for him. What do you make of all of that and all the noise there?
So all the noise with Virginia Tech, obviously he went there and his father and obviously all of that stuff. And it, to the media scope, it seems like the dream job and that's what you want to take over and everything. But, you know, to his point and, like, to your point too, like, it's a lot to follow in Frank Beamer's footsteps. for one. And then two, like on the point of like another SEC job, I think that Columbia and South Carolina provides a unique opportunity to that we're I would say our program, like on a national like media and like facility wise too, I think we're kind of a sleeping giant. I think we're up there. We can we're definitely like up there, like with facility wise and recruiting wise. Like if a recruit comes to South Carolina, he's gonna see, I wouldn't say the same, like, because Kirby Smart spends $1 million in recruiting every year. I wouldn't say he's going to see the same as he would with Georgia, but I would say, like, facility-wise and, like, what we've got going here, what the athletic department has done with the football program is that we've transitioned from all of the hype that Spurrier was able to build. We've taken that and realized, okay, this is where we want to be. This is what a high-quality football program looks like. And we built it to the point where Beamer seems like the guy, and he seems like the one who like wants to build it up from the ground up. Because obviously Muschamp was the ground for sure.
But so, I push back against that a little bit in terms of just that, like the ground up stuff. I need college coaches to stop getting away with this because you hear that everywhere. Yeah. It's a way to get job security and yeah. to make it seem as like, no, Muschamp was recruiting. Like, Muschamp didn't get the wins. He made some questionable offensive coordinator hires, like the McClendon hire and stuff like that. Yeah. He didn't evolve in that front. But, like, to make it seem like South Carolina is UConn in year zero is yeah. just not true. Like, I understand there are disparities between Georgia and South Carolina. Yeah. But when they do that, man, it's not just South Carolina. So I'm not picking on Beamer here. But, like, it is a trope across all of college football now where they're like, hey, brick by brick, we got to start from the ground level. I'm tearing this all down. It's like, no, you don't. Not every job is like that. Jim Moore is a bare bones situation at UConn. A lot of these SEC jobs are not bare bones. Like Eli Drinkwitz was not coming into a bare bones situation. Brian Harsin's not coming into a bare bones situation. And this idea that you deserve 3 to 4 years to get your guys in there and figure stuff out is just not true. Like Heupel went in there immediately with all these transfers.
Yeah,
he's gonna go 7-5 in year zero. Like he did it with none of his guys. Like he went through. Hendon Hooker came in for Pruitt in January, and he did everything. So it's just it's just like I have to have this diatribe because this is why I should not be allowed in press conferences, Joe. Because I'm immediately pushing back and raising my hand and being like, no. Do I need to go back to the rink? Like, let's just look at your roster and then we'll compare it to like, I don't know. Let's just throw out a team here. West Virginia, North Carolina, whatever. Like, you're not getting a sob story from me and you don't get 3 years just because. No, I'm not doing that. I'm not playing that game with you.
I'm here for that too. Like, Beamer did inherit Kevin Harris and as a Corey White and a Jordan Birch, as you will. But I'm saying
Lynch too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so from that standpoint, yes, Muschamp did recruit and he did have his guys, you know, in here, but it just from the standpoint, and I would like going on your point from the ground up, I would say another coach who's in that position would be Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to your point, like I do agree. Beamer has had a little bit and he's really good. I wouldn't say that this is necessarily like a doc on him, but he's very good at swaying the general public. His press conferences, God bless him, but they're hard to cover from a media standpoint because he talks for a half hour. You know, my roommate was like, why don't you just take what you want and what out of what he said? I'm like, well, because he talks for 30 minutes and there's so much that he said that, you know, you could take it in so many different directions. At the end of the day, like you're right. He didn't necessarily inherit a ground zero situation. And we, you know, all we got to do is get one of the last two. And ideally, the last one would be the more sweeter one against Clemson. But
Let's talk about that. Like Clemson's not like it is incredible that we are entertaining Clemson, South Carolina being close. But I think we've seen enough from Clemson's offense to make the case that like if South Carolina has an opportunity, it's just going to be an ugly, gross, low scoring, turnover heavy type deal. But like I am not ready to just checkmark Clemson getting through that game, which is the first time in a really long time. And it's not really a Shane Beamer thing, because like it's really just a Clemson thing, but it's a possibility.
Yeah, it's Clemson being down this year, number one, and like just have them having an off year, and you know it's exciting for like to be a student at South Carolina when like there's actually a possibility we might beat Clemson and we might beat them at home. Because I refuse to cover this game for the paper because I get to make it to a Clemson-Carolina game at home, and this is going to be the last one as my time as a student. So I'm like, I told my editor, I'm like, hey, I'm not covering this one. We've got the best chance we've had in years. I got to be in that stadium. He's like, I totally understand. But I think, yeah, like Clemson being down, and their offense has shown that they have the firepower, that they can do it. It's just, it's a matter of, you know, I feel like this game might be in almost any given Saturday, if you will. You know, what team shows up for South Carolina and what team shows up for Clemson? Because we've seen it both on both ends of the spectrum this season. Like obviously from us in the Florida game, if we show up like we did against Florida, like it could be a long day for Clemson. But again, to Clemson's testament, if they show up like they did against I haven't really looked at their schedule much, but you know, if they show up like a team that we've seen, I guess from like I'm originally from South Bend, Indiana, so I watched the game, the Notre Dame Clemson game last year, and I would kind of compare the two teams, other than the fact that Clemson isn't as powerful as they were, or they didn't necessarily have as many many units on offense and defense as they do this year. But at the same time, it kind of feels like with DJ Uiagalelei at center, it kind of seems like it's been, I don't want to say the issue, because obviously there's a lot of issues with a struggling offense, as I should know at South Carolina, but it just seems different. And, you know, South Carolina fans are rallying behind that. And just the fact that they were down, I mean, any game that they lost, if you were in the stadium and they put it up on the scoreboard, cheers erupted from around the stadium. And so, you know, it's just that general excitement that I feel like the South Carolina fan base is bringing to this game. Like, hey, they stink this year. We might actually beat them. And I think that's why this game's getting national attention. And to say like that South Carolina is even in it is fun, because the Palmetto Bowl is a great rivalry. It's, you know, ACC versus SEC. And it's always been like when South Carolina can get up to, you know, kind of a little bit more of a level that, you know, other SEC teams are playing on, it's a pretty good testament of the difference between the SEC and ACC and what a good ACC team looks like in Clemson and what a good SEC, or I shouldn't say good, but decent SEC program in South Carolina looks like.
Good SEC program. Let's settle down. Let's settle down, sir. I know you're not covering the game as a writer, but let's settle down on that front.
I'm telling you, it's very hard not to get behind what he's doing, because he just talking and he's so positive. And you know, I think after the most humbling we've seen Beamer all year is after that Georgia game, and he was just like you see they got 5 stars across the board, like there's nothing you can do about it, like that clip press conference, like that.
Oh, I just experienced it on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a humbling experience playing a team like Georgia, especially this year.
It's not even humbling, it's just not fun. Didn't enjoy the entire second half, and it was cold. Like, now we're playing Georgia every year when it's cold because of the Auburn switch in their schedule. So, no, did not have a great time. Have a great time. But it is what it is. Like I said, this is still just like just what we expected going into this year in Tennessee versus where we're at. I'll take those lumps, especially if we close out on a high note against South Alabama and Vanderbilt, as we should. And like something that we can all agree, and your South Carolina listeners that will tune in for this, is that the cool thing about Tennessee, especially now, because you wanted to bring it back to Tennessee, I could see it, that's kind of where you're angling towards, Joe, is that like Tennessee is now the sports czars, the sports kings of the conference as a whole. Like basketball, we have a realistic shot of winning a national title. Baseball, we just saw where Tony Vitello is taking this program, and they're not going anywhere. The Lady Vols, our soccer team, SEC champions. Tennessee is now we are a year-round program. We're a year-round program. That's what we can hold over Georgia, who now go into hibernation in a few months with basketball and baseball on the horizon. So I'm here for it, because, you know, that football might not quite be there, but you know, I get to enjoy great Tennessee sports all year round, and hey, that's a rarity.
And Heupel, like you're right, I was kind of hinting at it. Like, I feel like our programs are in kind of a similar situation skill wise, and with the first head coach. The only difference between Tennessee and South Carolina, I will say, is that Tennessee's got the brand. They're, you know, it's the big mighty Vols, and you know, up there in Knoxville, and you guys have more of like a. Almost, yeah, like just a bigger brand than us.
Well, I think it's the scheme, right? Like, see, so the difference with y'all, year zero of Heupel and year zero of Beamer is he's a CEO and Heupel's an offensive play caller. Like,
yep,
that's exactly the difference, is everything with Beamer comes down to recruiting and who he hires below him. Heupel can come in with someone else's players and he's scheming Cedric Tillman open for 200 yards receiving and he can just plug in Hendon Hooker. Like, Shane Beamer does not bring that level. It's just, it's not that one's better than the other. It's just they're two different things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Marcus Satterfield, our offensive coordinator, like, he's developing. Like, I got to give it to him. Like, he's learning each week. He's progressing from a play call standpoint, and he's getting better at checking every box and making sure that, you know, it kind of goes back to the run game thing with, like, the schematics behind it. Like, he's getting better at checking every box and making sure that his players, like, are aware of schemes and the blitz packages and stuff like that. And, I mean, to Clayton White's testament, our defensive coordinator, he's done fantastic things with the defense. I mean, he was getting defense when he got the job, but at the same time, like, schematically, our defense hasn't really fallen off from, I guess, years past with guys like we've seen the resurgence in the defensive backs with Jalen Foster and Cam Smith in the same way that we saw it with J.C. Horn and Israel Mukamu. Like, it's kind of the same thing, and White has done a great job at kind of coming in and adapting to what he's already had. And with offense, like, it is hit or miss. It's such a hit or miss side of the ball, I guess. So give credit there. But yeah, Satterfield's learning. He's getting better at it each week. And
so both are back next year for sure.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. I think Beamer has a lot of faith in Satterfield. I think they work well together, number one, and that's what you want too. Like, he's one of Beamer's guys. And if I think next year, if, you know, the offense doesn't improve, then we'll start to ask those questions. But I feel like both of them have done a pretty good job just kind of coming in here and being able to, you know, write an offense that works with the personnel. And, you know, hopefully, again, like, we don't want to say from ground zero, but with, you know, what Beamer and Satterfield and White all came in here with, what their idea for the program is, it'll be interesting to see these next couple of years how Beamer recruits for a Satterfield offense and for a White defense. If White keeps progressing it the way he is and keeps showing, I mean, he was named I can't remember the name of the award for the coordinator, but he was named on the watch list for the defensive.
Is it Broyles?
It is the Broyles Award. Yeah,
because Tim Banks is on it for DC. Yeah.
Yeah, and so if White can kind of keep that up, like, I'm going to be honest, I think he'll start seeing other offers elsewhere if he can kind of keep on the trend that he's going, like the recognition with the Broyles Award and what have you. I think he's done a great job with, I mean, adapting, number one, and two, just being able to, you know, put a game plan together that no matter, like, obviously, like, those aren't the guys that you helped recruit, but putting a game plan together with those guys that, you know, and having somewhat of success with it has been more of a testament than I'd say Satterfield's struggles. But, you know, obviously you hope for the best.
Absolutely. Both. Well, let's wrap up here. Who do we watch down the stretch? Who are some guys that folks should pay attention to for the Gamecocks the last 2 weeks here?
I'm going to say is a Quandre White, our running back, and then I'm going to say Jalen Foster. I know he's been on a lot of watch lists and what have you, but I feel like going down the stretch, Jalen Foster, Cam Smith, and then again, Zaquandre White. White has done great things in the run game and has proved to be more of an effective back in some situations than Kevin Harris. Kevin Harris, like, they've been splitting touches recently. But yeah, so White's a dynamic back. He can kind of do it all. And, you know, it's more of like a two running back system. We got Harris to carry most of the workload and then White to kind of bounce it out to the outside. And then defensively, again, I think Cam Smith gets slept on a little bit. He's one of the top corners in the nation, in my opinion. I think he should have a high draft stock. I don't know why people aren't talking about that. You know, he seems to be locked down. And the only thing with Cam is that it's the penalties, but, you know, you can try to fix those and, you know, you can hope that he's, you know, learned from his mistakes previously. But yeah, Cam Smith, I would say, and then Zaquandre White.
There you go. How do we keep up with your work at the Daily Gamecock this week, Joe?
So you can follow me on Twitter. I've got all, I post all my articles to Twitter and then Instagram as well, Joe Machica, M-A-C-H-E-C-A. You can find all of my stuff there or on the Daily Gamecock website. usually have an article or two posted at one time. So, yes, sir.
There you go. There you go. Joe, thanks so much for the time. I greatly appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go. Both of our teams finishing out 2-0. That's the plan. All right.
Yes.
Joe.
Yeah, good one, Chase.
Talk to you soon.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.